Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9. We're here on the That Conference stage. This is like the coolest setup.
This is the coolest set I've ever seen.
Imagine being like at a campfire with the venerable Richard Campbell.
How venerable am I? Exactly?
I wish they had the smoke going. Like when I was interviewing Clark, there was like big billow and he was like, oh, and I was like, that's about right for a campsite. But this is like the summer camp for geeks, and they set this up and they let us record here.
And that's the original sign.
Is it?
Yeah. You know, I've been doing this now for 4 years. I've been to every single That Conference. That sign is the original. The styling's changed a little bit. This set's definitely
much bigger.
Upgrade. Yeah. Well, there's 1,200 people here, man. This is a big show.
It's fantastic. And like I was talking to Clark, the vibe is somewhere in between like a user group meeting.
Yes.
And a big conference. It's like, but it's a really good in between. Just chill with people.
Have you walked into the open spaces?
Yes.
They're packed. Like, and the board's full. I actually just submitted one. You know, I do the Geek Outs for .NET Rocks. So the people ask me, are we going to talk about some Geek Out subjects? So I just put it in for tomorrow afternoon. It's Humans Living in Space Geek Out. Because it's one I'm still working on the notes for.
Oh my goodness.
So I thought I'd just, you know, talk to the audience. We'd have a chance to engage on it and sort of figure out.
Dude, you can't say topics like that to me without getting me all excited about wanting to talk about it right now.
Yeah, well, that's the fun part about an open space. You really go any direction you want. There's plenty of technical topics on that board.
Of course.
But there's also, like, I saw one that's social media APIs for good. You know, just that kind of thinking about.
There was one for evil too.
There's one for evil as well.
So tell me, how has that conference sort of evolved over the years?
Well, you know, Clark started out with a vision of he wanted to do Code Mash in the summer, right? I mean, we're at a Kalahari like the Code Mash.
It's a very distinct flavor, yeah.
Yes, and in the indoor water park thing and so forth, but having it in the summertime rather than in the wintertime. I mean, it's cold in Sandusky in January.
It's not just cold. Arctic blast last year. It was ridiculous. I remember getting out of the car there and thinking, how do people live here? It's like 75 where I'm from.
You're a California boy.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, I think that's where he started. But, you know, the advantage of it being in August is kids are out of school. People bring their families.
Yeah.
And so I think something that just sort of emerged was there's a group of kids that have grown up on the show over 4 years. They've come every year and they've started to get more and more engaged. They had a kids mash variation of getting kids doing robotics and playing with electronics and so forth. But then, you know, there was an insight that they were teaching each other.
Right.
They were teaching each other JavaScript. They're teaching each other Scratch. And so he just encouraged that. Corey Drew, our friend Corey
Drew.
She's
fantastic.
Put together this amazing talk on the Friends and Family keynote that I helped close out. That just, actually she has video clips from the end of each of that conference in turn, showing Clark grabbing onto this idea that not only kids teach kids, but can teach everybody.
Yeah.
And so bit by bit, this kid track has evolved into, I think, one of the most important parts of that conference.
Yeah, and it's a difficult thing. I mean, if you're an organizer, there's nowhere to go like, hey, let me see what it's like to organize a technical conference for kids. There's no such thing.
Nothing. And what's interesting is this idea that it is what actually works is not us teaching kids.
Uh-huh.
We have children. We've done this. You know, but we're parents. We're always seen as parents. But when one 11-year-old teaches another 11-year-old, they learn more. They're more engaged. Like, what I'm seeing happen here at that conference is the kind of excitement that we had when we first encountered computers.
Right.
You know, there's a schism. We're all immigrants to the internet world, right?
Uh-huh.
We all remember a time before. And I think a side effect of that is that we're way more excited about it than the natives. Our kids who've had internet their whole lives, they don't think anything of it, right? It's as exciting to us as a refrigerator. My grandmother knew a time before refrigerators. So I remember as a kid, every time I opened the fridge, my grandmother freaked out. Close the fridge.
You're gonna let it out,
Exactly, because she was an immigrant to refrigeration.
I see.
I was a native, right? The things we're excited about as immigrants to internet is very different from what the natives are excited about. But when you watch these kids collaborating on things, you see that kind of excitement. It may be focused differently, but they're super engaged.
How do you generate, like, I was excited when I opened a socket and made the internet talk to my, and I was like,
they're out there.
Now my kids are upset because there's commercials on the telly and they're used to like Netflix, right? I mean, how do you get a generation that is just not excited by the innovations that we've seen in our lifetime to be excited about the innovations they will make in the future?
Yeah, and I think I think that's going to happen. I think we're seeing that engagement right now. The challenge now is to us to start seeing through their eyes at their excitement. I think they will ultimately teach us.
Right.
If we're willing to learn. That's coming. What I see happening at that conference is a cadre, a small core. It's about a dozen this year of 10, 12, 14-year-olds. They've been here a few years now. They're comfortable. They're confident. They know how to teach. You know, they're engaged in doing that, and it's time for us to start watching them and seeing they're teaching the way.
Someone was doing like an Angular class. Some girl was doing an Angular class for kids. I'm like, actually, that's probably more for me. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yes.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
But I'm fascinated at the difference between watching a John Papa teach AngularJS and a 13-year-old girl teaching AngularJS.
Did you go to that session?
I haven't. I didn't get a chance to see it. But I when I saw it, I'm like, that fascinates me because of that dynamic.
The perspective would be absolutely
completely
wonderful
different.
To like, oh, hey. Because, I mean, we get the same, I mean, let's be honest. We get the same kind of content given in the same way.
We're going to come at it from a forms over data point of view every time.
Yeah.
Right? It makes sense for me to reference a VB6 app when talking about, you know, building MVC apps.
Sure.
Right? It's all forms over data. Remember when you did it this way? Here's how you do it that way. But what happens when somebody doesn't have that background? Right?
You get like an analogy that's going to be totally revealing of a different aspect of
totally
what you're working
different
on.
Point of view on it. And I think that's really how we carry this forward.
Sure.
You know, I've had a year on .NET Rocks of really having these thoughts around whether our experience is holding us back or giving us an advantage. And so I've been exploring more conversations with folks who don't have that experience.
We're
coming into it fresh and seeing how they see it differently, because I think it's a way of shining a light going forward.
So what are some things that you're learning when you're approaching technology from a new perspective in that way?
No resistance to infrastructure.
What do you mean by that?
We struggle building tests. We struggle building continuous integration. We struggle with automated deployment. And it's not that it's hard so much as it goes against every fiber in our being.
It feels
of everything
like
we've ever
done. It's like a
side
work.
Yeah, and it's
I don't
why would
do
I spend time
work.
On that?
I don't
that?
Want to do side work.
Well, and I don't know that they want to either, but they want it to be so painless, they grab on to all these new approaches so that it goes
so
as quickly as possible, right? Watching a young, enthusiastic quality engineer, somebody leading the testing infrastructure, he doesn't want to run any tests by hand. Right, he's only about automation. He's inserting these test suites in and watching them in aggregate, and that's totally natural to him. He's not got the hang-ups that somebody who's got 20 years of testing has.
Sure.
Right. Same with deployment, and same with design. I mean, there's stuff we hang on to that we cling on to. I still, deep in my heart, hate triggers in SQL Server.
Yeah.
And I realize they burned me in like 1986, and I'm still not over it.
It's a long
time. I still have the scar, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens. That's the risk we have with our experience. And I'm lucky enough that I've figured out that I still have that hate, and I sort of remember why.
Sure.
But how many reflexes do we have as experienced developers, and we don't know why we have that reflex?
And here's the thing, like, I don't feel that old, but I realized just the other day that I started writing code, like ASP.NET Classic 3, when I was 16 years old. I'm 36, that's 20 years.
20 years, man,
old
guy.
I'm like the old guy now, and I see some of these new people coming in, particularly there's a group of women that I know that work at a printing they have this really good sense of design and coding, and I just don't understand how you could do that, kids these days.
Nice.
How do you do that at the same time?
They started from scratch. That's the way they've always thought. We don't have to, you know, you've got a problem now that you've got 20 years of experience in coding and you know you'll never have 20 comparable number of years in design. So in some ways you reject it out of hand. Because I'm never going to be good at that compared to this.
Yeah.
Right? And they just don't have that. They don't have that issue.
That's got to be cool though, to see a kid's session on something as technical as Angular.
Yes.
To be able to get a perspective that you might have never even conceived possible.
It's very exciting, and I can't wait for next year. Like, this is only, we're just at the turning point of this, where it is now clearly a track, and clearly a mechanism works, and is repeatable.
Right.
So, you know, kudos to Clark and the team for finding this and taking it to, I don't know where it's going to go.
So in your estimation, this is my next question. I know you say you don't know where it's going to go, but where do you think it could go?
I think the core issue here is eventually the kids teach us.
Okay.
Right? I mean, and if, as long as we're open to it, and it's certainly been something that I've been working on all this year, mm-hmm. is seeing how folks with that younger eye approach development. And this is, I think, the most profound manifestation I've seen of that. You know, we've had a few shows this year on .NET Rocks, and I referenced Heather Downing specifically mm-hmm. that we interviewed here at the Nebraska Code Band back in March. 3 years of development time, a host of projects, and just none of the baggage that we carry around.
It's gonna be nice.
When are your scars baggage? You know, when is your experience actually a liability?
So here's the question, because I also talked to Uncle Bob
yeah.
Martin, and there is this, we need to be professional.
Yes.
But we want to have the non-experience sort of shed light on certain things. How do you find the balance?
Well, I think there's a stratum to that, right?
Okay.
And Bob and I have talked about this privately over drinks and things for years, actually.
Sure.
And I think the engineering model makes sense. Okay, so when you look at the construction of a bridge,
uh-huh.
there's only one certified engineer. That is the person who, backed by his certifying body, is liable for the implementation
of
that bridge.
And he's used the word liability, and it scared me, right?
But it is what it comes down to,
yeah.
right? And it's one of the problems we have in software, is that we avoid the liability of our software. Our end user license agreements say quite explicitly, the limit of the liability of the software is the amount you paid for it. Not what it costs you in business productivity, not what it makes you either. Remember,
yeah.
software is hugely productive, but I don't think that the entire workforce will all be certified software engineers. It makes no sense. We don't need that many. We need many, many developers, right?
Right.
The demand for developers only gets larger. The same way that you need a large force to build a bridge. It is never one person. It is a lot of people with a diverse set of skills but overseen by somebody who's ultimately on the hook, that ultimately signs for that, and who is beholden to their profession.
Got it.
More than beholden to the customer.
I see.
And that is a very difficult concept.
Because not every engineer is in there screwing all the bolts
of
the bridge, right? Because that's not what their job is.
And plenty of engineers that go through engineering school never actually take the certification and become a PEng. They don't need to. They're still qualified engineers. They're just not going to sign. They're going to do engineering-related work that will be signed off by the PEng.
I see.
Right? That's the difference. So, you know, I don't disagree with Bob Martin in any respect.
I
think he's correct.
Yeah.
If we don't create a proper organization and profession out of software, it will be placed upon us.
Oof.
After the disaster that actually raises it in the consciousness of the people and the politicians, this is inevitable. I thought it was going to be Y2K.
Really?
Absolutely. I worked hard through Y2K. We fixed a lot of software, and we pulled it off. But if we hadn't, everybody would have known. Software would have been on the cover of everything. If major systems had gone down, if stocks couldn't be traded, if water stopped,
power went out,
all of those things could have happened, and we avoided it by fixing it. But we'd be 15 years into regulation if we hadn't pulled that off.
My goodness.
Right. So. It's out there. The next disaster's out there. And sooner or later, we're going to be on the hook for it. So the sooner we can move towards what it actually means to be a profession, the better off we're all going to be.
So I like how you sort of said, we want the good beginners, we want the good perspective,
yeah.
but there always needs to be that gal that's in charge. She's the engineer who
yes.
is liable.
Yes, and is beholden to her profession above the customer.
That's cool, man. Yeah. Well, that's awesome speaking to you, bud.
It's always good to talk to you,
yeah,
buddy.
And he's got such a nice radio voice. You should do, like, podcasts or something.
That's a great idea.
Awesome.
I like that a lot.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Thanks for watching. We're here at that conference having a little fireside chat with Richard Campbell. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. Take care.